capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome to a Level Talk programme. My name's John Harrison. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are in the news almost every week. We've got used to hearing about Assange, what he does, but we now have a US government which seems to be broadcasting aggressive messages in Assange's direction. Could his relative freedom held up inside an embassy in London be about to end? In a speech last week at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, CIA Director Mike Pompeo said, "It's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is, a non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors like Russia." In this program, I'll be asking, among other things, my two guests, what powers the US actually has to arrest Assange if it decides to do that. Welcome Professor Parmar from the Department of International Politics at the City University of London, and Toby Cadman, an international law specialist and co-founder of Guernica 37, International Justice Chambers in London. Welcome both of you to the programme.
Thank you. Very pleased to be here.
Now, if I can ask you, please, I don't know who'd like to start first, but what powers does the US actually have to issue a warrant for Assange's arrest? And if he did, who would actually instigate and carry out the arrest itself?
Well, first of all, if an arrest warrant is issued by a US court, the usual procedure would be seeking an extradition request transmitted to the UK authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the UK courts deal with numerous extradition requests from the United States. I'm currently acting for the US government in a number of other extradition requests. So that's the usual procedure. Whether any request would be successful is another matter entirely. They will have to start the process by submitting an extradition request for him to stand trial.
Right. Well, they haven't done so far, I gather. Now, if they were to do so, would the UK authorities simply obey and do what they're told, basically? Or would there be some sort of a judicial procedure in the UK whereby Assange's case and his lawyer could argue against the extradition order?
Well, it would be a long, detailed process. It's not simply a matter of the UK authorities bowing to a UK request. It has to go before an extradition judge at Westminster Magistrates Court.
Mm-hmm.
He would have, if extradition was ordered, he would have the right to take it on appeal to the High Court, potentially the Supreme Court, and ultimately the European Court of Human Rights. So even if a request is made, we're not talking about a process which is going to be decided particularly quickly. These matters can take many years.
Okay. Professor Parmar, do you think there's a chance that the UK government would just do this anyway without giving heed to the necessary few years of bureaucratic legal proceedings which would hold this up if it was to happen?
I think that would be very difficult politically, because obviously the rule of law is considered to be paramount in the way in which Britain behaves and conducts itself at home and abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be very difficult for them to just ignore it. And the other thing is, of course, that Sweden still has a European arrest warrant out for a rape allegation against Julian Assange as well. And I think that it could well be that that might take precedence over any extradition request that the United States puts in at the moment. And the other thing, of course, is that Julian Assange remains in the Ecuadorian embassy, having received political asylum there, and has that ability to, or has the freedom freely at the moment, to remain there because of the new president saying that he would be allowing him to do so. President Trump has pretty much reversed himself on practically every question on which he stood during the campaign.
Yeah.
And on this question as well, he's basically aligned himself with the Barack Obama administration.
Yeah.
You'll recall that the Obama administration Department of Justice called WikiLeaks a malicious foreign actor.
So, right.
Which is not far from the kind of language being used by the Trump administration as well.
Yeah.
You know, there is a sort of set of reversals. And I guess once you're in power, then you will probably be very anxious about the leaks which have been going on and possible future leaks which may come from an organization such as WikiLeaks.
Yep.
So I think a lot of this is sort of upping the temperature politically.
Right.
Their ability to actually execute any of their sort of high-flown rhetoric is the same as it was for the Obama administration.
Right. And, of course, we also have a ruling by the United Nations in 2016, which it is instructions to the UK and Swedish authorities to ensure the WikiLeaks founders' liberty, protection, enjoyment of fundamental human rights. And the UK apparently has appealed twice against this ruling, but the UN is standing fast and it's not changing its directives. So I take your point, both of you, that it seems to be at the present time unlikely that Mr. Assange will be evicted either from the Ecuadorian embassy or he will be extradited to the United States or anywhere else.
May I just make one point there, please?
Yep.
That is that when President Obama was on the way out of office in December, January, he actually did, Julian Assange did say that he would voluntarily go to the United States should President Obama pardon and immediately release Chelsea Manning, from whom the cables from the State Department and Iraq war logs and so on had been received by WikiLeaks and then publicized.
Yeah.
And actually, President Obama did commute the sentence of Chelsea Manning, and Chelsea Manning is due to be released on the 17th of May this year, having a relatively small portion of a 35-year sentence, which was really meted out. I'm not sure what the status of that offer from Assange now is, but that is what is my understanding at the moment, that he had offered, even if it wasn't a pardon, that upon the release of Chelsea Manning, Assange would then offer to go to the United States.
Right. Well, I should imagine that in a situation where the director of the CIA is calling Mr. Assange's organization a non-state hostile intelligence service, he may be having second thoughts about that.
Well, it's not that different from what, as I say, the Obama administration was calling him.
Okay.
And his organization.
Yeah, fair enough.
You recall that Joe Biden referred to Assange and WikiLeaks as terror organizations. They needed to be hunted down.
Yeah.
With the full force of the law and so on. So this, the very heated rhetoric from 2011, 2012, then obviously Sarah Palin and others were calling for the death penalty and things like that.
Yeah.
So this, if you like, is a renewal of that kind of level of vitriol against Assange and WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
And I suspect that it's an attempt to look powerful now that, Trump has sort of changed positions on the question of warm relations with Russia, which he previously had put forward.
Yeah, and that leads me on to my next sort of theme, which is if this really is just kind of hot air and PR, isn't it? Sort of Mr. Trump appearing to be a really tough guy. Okay, let's get rid of this whistleblower guy. He's obviously in bed with the Russians, this, that, and the other. Now, is then he now being used just as a sort of a way to get at Russia? Because Assange, I mean, let me read you a speech that Julian Assange, a bit of a speech anyway, that he made in December 2016 to his supporters in Berlin over the internet. Assange said, Russian actions on its own doorstep in Eastern Europe do not, in fact, threaten the United States or any actual vital interests, nor does Moscow threaten the U.S. through its intervention on behalf of the Syrian government in the Middle East. That Russia is described incessantly as a threat in those areas as largely a contrivance arranged by the media, the Democratic and Republic National Committees, and by the White House, etc., etc., etc. I mean, that's a strong statement, isn't it? I mean, you can see why, you know, the U.S. is now turning its guns on Assange, even if they can't actually do anything. Toby?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think a lot of what we're hearing is just rhetoric. And the other guy said, I mean, the current U.S. administration has changed its policy on pretty much, or its position on pretty much every policy. So I think what we are seeing is very much trying to create sort of smoke and mist because of criticisms that are being made, mainly criticisms attaching him to Russian influence. So I think what we are seeing is very much a question of creating a lot of noise where there's going to be very little result. As the other speaker said quite rightly, the likelihood of Assange being extradited to the US is highly unlikely when you consider the other ruling, which still stands. I mean, you mentioned the UN Working Group's decision, which, frankly, I think was an absolutely ludicrous decision, because he's not been arbitrarily detained, in my
is hiding under the protection of the Ecuadorian embassy so that he's not extradited for serious charges in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And that process would have to be dealt with first. And the courts, if there is a request, the courts would have to look at whether that request would be withdrawn and proceed on the US request.
Yeah.
In terms of his agreeing to go there, I think he may very well change his position now.
Yeah.
There are so many issues that need to be looked at, and I think the likelihood of him being sent is very unrealistic.
Yeah.
And whilst I'm not necessarily a supporter of Julian Assange himself, I think the whole process does strike fear in what are legitimate whistleblowers. And I think the consequences of that are serious. But I don't see that anything is going to result from what we're hearing from the US at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that the UK is ignoring the UN's directive, isn't that a serious issue in itself?
Well, no, because it's not binding.
It's not binding. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I mean, the UK's position on this is highly hypocritical, because when the UN Working Group issued a ruling in favour of Mohamed Nasheed in the Maldives, who's now been granted asylum in the UK, they said that the Maldives was obliged to implement it. Yet when the ruling was made against the UK, they basically said it's a load of nonsense by individuals who are not even professional lawyers or judges to make such a decision. So it is a highly hypocritical position that the UK has taken, but it, in fact, is not legally binding.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a short break here. But I mean, just to back up what both of you said, you know, Barry Pollock, Assange's lawyer, says that he's unaware of any imminent prosecution. So it really is a media, I don't know, politically created storm about nothing. Let's take a short break here.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Welcome back to Level Talk Programme. Today we're talking about the US's very aggressive stance against Julian Assange, what it means and how likely it is that he will be arrested. I'm talking to Professor Parmar from the Department of International Politics, School of Social Sciences at City University of London, and Toby Cadman, an international law specialist and co-founder of Guernica 37 International Justice Chambers in London. Now, this whole issue with Assange, for me as a journalist, brings up sort of some related issues connected with freedom of speech and the right, basically, to say what you say and other things that I hold personally very important. And I was just thinking about this today. Okay, WikiLeaks basically is an organization that feeds on leaks which are submitted to it and then brings them into the public domain. Now, I have two questions. Firstly, what is the difference between what Assange is doing through WikiLeaks and what good journalists are doing? And secondly, if Julian Assange can be, okay, he's not being arrested, is he? But he's been held up in that building in the centre of London for a long time. I mean, he's almost been arrested already, hasn't he? You know, he's on a sort of house arrest. I mean, what does it mean for freedom of speech in general? Who'd like to go first?
I'm happy to take
Please.
Clearly, WikiLeaks, well, it claims to be a journalistic organisation, and Julian Assange's, I think, official position is often referred to as editor-in-chief. And to a degree, there is reportage on the WikiLeaks website. They then pass on for consideration for publication to a large number of other publications as well.
Yes.
So it's an investigative organization which receives large amounts of information from usually anonymous sources, and they often work with very kind of respectable outlets which are held in relatively high esteem, generally speaking.
Yep.
And therefore, it is a publisher or a whatever. And the First Amendment of the American Bill of Rights doesn't make a distinction, as far as the courts are concerned, between newspapers and other publishers. So it's a very, very blurry line. But the key issue is that this is really an attempt to intimidate anyone who wants to come out and leak anything against the current administration or the previous one. And as I was saying before, that the Obama administration, I think, it carried out more actions against government employees under the Espionage Act of 1917 than all previous American administrations put together.
Yeah. I read that the about the First Amendment, that the US seems to be saying that Assange has no First Amendment rights because he's not a US citizen. Actually, that's what Mike Pompeo said. Julian Assange has no First Amendment freedoms. He's sitting in an embassy in London. He's not a US citizen.
Well, there's a bit of a dispute about that. There are some people on the right of the spectrum who make that claim, but there are others who argue that any person in the United States, so were I to visit or to be resident in the United States, but not a citizen, or even a green card holder, I still enjoy the freedoms and protections of the Constitution. So I have that right of free speech and the protections against illegal search and seizure and so on and so forth. So I think that would be something that would have to be tested in the courts, but I don't think it would be a very tough test. And given what we know about the knowledge of the Constitution and law in the Trump administration, which has been had several rulings, executive orders and so on, flat down by the courts, it would seem to be that they're wrong on this question as well.
Yeah. Toby, what's your angle on that, as you're a legal specialist, on the First Amendment argument?
I would agree. I mean, to suggest that he would have no protection of the Constitution because he's a non-national is a ludicrous argument to make, and I have heard it made by U.S. authorities. I agree. If it got to a challenge before a judicial authority in the U.S., I cannot see how it could possibly stand up.
Yeah.
I mean, the protections are there for all, not just restricted to a particular class.
Yeah.
You know, we would have to go into all other considerations of whether it's a discriminatory practice. But I don't see how it could possibly stand up. But just going back to the point that you made earlier about effectively being under house arrest, and you really have to look at the reason why he sought the refuge of the Ecuadorian government, and it was because he had lost all levels of his appeal in the UK courts, and his removal to Sweden was imminent. And the reason why he felt that he required the protection of a foreign state was because he thought that he was going to be simply handed over to the US authorities. That was the reason why he sought refuge. The position taken by a number of lawyers here, myself included, is that he is more at risk of being extradited from the UK because of our extradition treaty with the United States than from Sweden. To suggest that the Swedish courts lack independence and impartiality was a ludicrous argument to be making. So all of these matters need to be borne in mind. I mean, he's not under house arrest. He is in self-imposed confinement.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, that's a very important thing to bear in mind, and we should do when we're talking about Julian Assange. You know, it's not as simple as it seems, is it? Thank you. But I would like to bring up this whole issue again about journalism. I mean, I don't have access to internet information. Nobody's feeding me, hacked emails or whatever. But from time to time, people do give me information, and they don't want me to mention their name, And I was just thinking, well, what's the difference between what a journalist does, and a normal journalist, so to speak, and what somebody like Assange does? Is there a difference? How would you disseminate between these two different kinds of information, or is it just purely a political difference that we're talking about? Professor Palmer.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point. And I remember, two or three years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago now, about the Washington Post making an editorial where it said that if you arrest Assange and you break up organizations like WikiLeaks, you effectively attack a fundamental component of good investigative journalism, which is the protection of your sources.
Exactly.
And that if you name those sources, you would then not be able to hold to account those who hold great power in the state or elsewhere.
Yeah.
And effectively what WikiLeaks does, as far as I understand it, is it allows anonymous individuals, often in very good positions in big corporations or in government agencies and so on, and it has a sort of number of different walls between itself and the source, such that there's a kind of protection and not a kind of a collaboration between them. And I think one of the cases which the Obama administration tried to make was to try to suggest that WikiLeaks had directed Chelsea Manning to look for certain kinds of documents.
Right.
And also try to tutor him, into flipping a password or something.
Yeah.
And thereby, what they were trying to establish was a connection between WikiLeaks, Assange, and Manning, and thereby use that prosecution against Manning to go after a collaborator. yeah. and direct non-collaborator. So yeah. I think they were unable to establish that. But, you know, the key issue is that investigative journalism, which is thin on the ground these days, is more and more necessary, but it's under greater and greater pressure.
Yes.
And whistleblowers are kind of, there's a sort of hunting down of whistleblowers, and legislation passed. And even when legislation passed to protect them, President Obama said something in a kind of rider that effectively national security will trump everything. And mm-hmm. the determination of what is national security and what is covering up bad mistakes or bad behavior on the part of state officials, that's a key issue.
Well, we are very good at inventing words, aren't we? Inventing new terms and schools and of thought and, calling a heinous crime by an aggressive government the right to intervene for humanitarian causes based on human rights. I mean, but let us return again to this whole subject of freedom of speech. And, okay, I agree with you, Toby, he may be in the wrong, Assange. He should have gone back home and faced the music. And perhaps just as we are attacking Assange's accuser, the other story is also true, that he's using that position to attack his accusers when his accusers could be quite right. So that's all very clear, and we take on board both sides of the argument. But the point remains, I think, as Professor Palmer pointed out, that there is a problem with basic freedom of speech. Toby, do you think that we are now heading into an area where people like Assange, Snowden and others, are basically their situation has become more and more difficult, or not?
Absolutely, it has become more and more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I think the starting point that we have to think of is that, as a lawyer, I very much follow the line that I may disagree with everything you say, but I will fight for the death of your right to say it.
Right.
But we also have to consider the fact that freedom of expression is not an absolute right. It can be subject to certain limitations. And when we're looking about leaking matters of national security, the question is it public interest for that information to be made public? And in many cases, it is. And investigative journalists, individuals like those you've mentioned, do not receive the level of protection that they require.
Mm-hmm.
And it will have an impact, which is why I said at the beginning, the situation with Julian Assange should have far-reaching consequences for other whistleblowers, others that are leaking information that is considered to be in the public interest.
Yeah.
There does need to be a system of protection. I mean, there are organizations that provide protection to whistleblowers. There is, through the UN system as well, of course, Human Rights Defenders, a protection system, but it is not enough.
Not enough, yeah.
It's very dangerous for these individuals. I mean, one case that I'm involved with in relation to Syria, I mean, we have the witness Siva, who put his life at risk to leak information which is vital in the public interest to know exactly what the Syrian regime is doing. And it seems as though, as long as it doesn't affect our national security, then we'll support that. But it needs to be a lot more transparent. There needs to be greater protection for those that put their lives at risk. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that Julian Assange's or WikiLeaks is the test case to decide that, but I think it will have far-reaching consequences.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole thing about what's happening now is that it seems if we can't get him, if we can't shut him up, then at least we can somehow degrade the credibility of those other news organizations which are propagating, which are passing on the message that Assange is creating, is publishing. Do you think that this whole thing could be an attempt to reduce the credibility of outfits like The Guardian, which has published millions of words which have come from the WikiLeaks website, although I should qualify that with a disclaimer. I haven't counted exactly how many words there are God, it's published, but it's published a lot. Do you think this is a campaign to attack the credibility of the people who support the WikiLeaks organization?
Potentially to strike fear in those that are going to be publishing.
Yeah.
I think that is a risk. And, you've mentioned a couple of times about the Washington Post reporting. I mean, we shouldn't forget the significance of the Washington Post in their publishing of matters during Nixon's time. So, there is this culture of fear as to the consequences of if you publish this material, then you are also at risk.
Right.
I think it is a realistic concern.
Yeah, I mean, that is a real danger. I mean, I'm involved in the publishing world. I mean, it affects me. Professor Palmer, you're going to say something.
No, I think it is an attempt to intimidate, basically. And if you can ask reporters to divulge the source of their information, that's going to mean that a lot of people are not going to be able to speak out.
Yeah.
And therefore less able to hold to account people in powerful positions. And I think that this is a kind of major, if you like, infringement, a basic role of the mass media in a democratic system. It is actually to act as a kind of a watchdog on the powerful.
Thank you very much indeed, both of you, for your very interesting comments. And I think that I hope you have two listeners, gained some information, knowledge from this program. So thank you, Professor Palmer from the Department of International Politics, School of Social Sciences at the City University of London, and Toby Cadman, an international law specialist and co-founder of Guernica 37 International Justice Chambers in London. Thank you and goodbye.